CN is a composite. The blockages, the conversations, the doors that closed are real, and they are closing across Yorkshire and the Humber now. This is their story. In one of England's most disadvantaged constituencies, healthcare assistants who want to train as nurses find themselves trapped between desperate hospital wards and empty training labs. The people exist, the facilities exist, the need exists, but the budget caps that keep them apart are treated as laws of nature rather than political choices.
I knew I wanted to be a nurse from the moment I watched the staff at Diana, Princess of Wales Hospital, care for my nan in her final weeks. She was everything to me after Dad lost his job when the trawlers stopped coming back to Grimsby, and seeing how gently they turned her, how they listened when she was frightened, how they made space for dignity even in those sterile rooms. That was when I understood what I wanted to do with my life. I'd been working as a healthcare assistant since I was 17, saving every pound I could while living at home in Cleethorpes. The nurses I worked alongside encouraged me constantly. "You've got the instincts, Shan," they'd say. "You should apply for training." But I knew the route. 3 years at university, student debt, and somehow surviving without a full-time wage. It took me until 2019 to feel ready, with enough savings to supplement whatever bursary I might get. I was 24, older than most applicants, but I'd seen enough of the wards to know this wasn't a romantic notion. This was what I wanted to spend my working life doing. The University of Hull's nursing programme had everything I was looking for. Close enough to visit home, strong reputation, good placement partnerships with the hospitals where I already worked. My application was solid. 5 years of healthcare experience, strong A-levels from Franklin College, glowing references from the ward managers who'd watched me develop. The interview went well. I felt confident walking out of the health sciences building that day, imagining myself back there in September with a student ID instead of a visitor's badge. The rejection letter arrived in June, not a rejection based on my application, but something else entirely. "We regret to inform you that there are no funded places available for this year's cohort. Health Education England has implemented revised training caps due to budget constraints from Treasury spending limits." I read it 3 times before it sank in. They weren't saying I wasn't good enough. They were saying there was no money. At first, that seemed reasonable. Budgets are tight everywhere, aren't they? I called the admissions office to ask about deferrals or waiting lists, thinking maybe next year would be different. The administrator was sympathetic but clear. "I'm afraid it's not about deferrals, love. The funding just isn't there. You're welcome to apply again next year, but we can't make any promises." So I waited and applied again in 2020. Same response, same language, about budget constraints and Treasury limits. I applied again in 2021, this time including a letter about my additional year of experience, my commitment to the local health system, my willingness to work anywhere in Yorkshire and the Humber after qualifying. Same result. By then, I was getting desperate. I contacted Northern Lincolnshire and Goole NHS Foundation Trust directly, hoping they might have some sponsorship scheme I hadn't heard about. The conversation with their workforce development manager will stay with me forever. "We desperately need nurses, Sheehan. We've got wards running with agency staff because we can't recruit permanent nurses, but we can't sponsor training due to insufficient workforce development funding. I wish I could help you, I really do, but my hands are tied." That phrase, "my hands are tied," I started hearing it everywhere. From the university, from the trusts, from Health Education England, when I finally managed to get through to someone there. Always the same story. "We want to help, but there's no money." The system seemed designed to produce sympathy, but no solutions. It was walking past the Health Sciences building one evening in late 2021 that everything changed for me. I just had another conversation with Hull's admissions team, another explanation about funding caps and Treasury constraints. The building was still lit up even though it was past 8 o'clock, and I found myself peering through the ground floor windows. Row after row of simulation labs, all the equipment you'd need to learn clinical skills, mannequins, monitoring equipment, beds set up for practice scenarios, all of it sitting empty. I stood there for 20 minutes, looking at those unused facilities, thinking about the wards I'd just left, where we were understaffed again, where the permanent nurses were exhausted and the agency staff barely knew our systems. The equipment existed, The building existed. The teachers existed. I'd met some of them during my interview. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? The next day, I met a friend who worked in the university's student services department for coffee. I asked her about the nursing program, about whether they'd managed to fill all their places. Her answer changed everything for me. Oh no, Sian. They only filled about half the places this year, same as last year. The funding caps mean they can't take everyone who applies, even when they've got willing students and empty spaces. That's when I stopped accepting the excuse. Half the training place is sitting empty, while qualified applicants got turned away because there was no money. Empty labs, while hospitals operated short-staffed because they couldn't recruit nurses. People like me, ready to train, ready to commit 3 years of our lives to learning, being told the system couldn't afford to teach us. I started asking different questions. If the government that prints the pounds and issues the currency was telling us it couldn't find enough pounds to fill the training places that already existed, what were we really talking about? The building was there, the equipment was there, the lecturers were there, the students were there, queuing up to apply. The only thing missing was the political decision to connect all these pieces. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the facilities were available. They were, all of them, standing right there, waiting to be used. I'm still a healthcare assistant, still on the same wards, still watching the gap between what we need and what the system says it can afford to provide. But I hear those conversations differently now. When someone says there's no money, I think about those empty labs, those unfilled places, those willing people told the cupboard is bare by the government that stocks the cupboard. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. What happened to me wasn't bad luck or economic necessity. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. And it's happening to people in every constituency where someone in Westminster looks at real needs and real resources and says the connection between them is unaffordable.
What Sian experienced has a name: impossible expectations. This technique demands perfect outcomes and zero waste before committing public funds, while applying no such standard to tax cuts or corporate bailouts. Impossible expectations. Work like demanding a weather forecast guarantee perfect sunshine before planning any outdoor event, then using every rainy day as proof that weather forecasting is worthless. The standard is deliberately unreachable. In healthcare, this means requiring NHS spending to solve every problem permanently before approving any investment. When Sian was told there was no money for nursing training, the underlying logic was that any program which doesn't guarantee perfect nurse retention, zero dropout rates, and immediate ward efficiency isn't worth funding. The same Treasury that found £500 billion for bank bailouts in 2008 suddenly couldn't find millions for nurse training because what if some students changed careers later? The austerity objection is revealing. The NHS is a bottomless pit. We cannot keep throwing money at it. This sets an impossible standard where no amount of evidence of need is ever sufficient. No service is bottomless. NHS costs are measurable. The UK spends less per capita on health than France, Germany, or the Netherlands. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Sian's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Great Grimsby and Cleethorpes ranks 39 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 20-25. The constituency has 368 registered charities and received £5 million in total grants according to 360, giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.